It's 8:12 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the Summit County Council meets tomorrow in work session starting at 12:20 at the County Courthouse in Colville. In the studio with a preview of the agenda, I have County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
A vacancy on the East Side Planning Commission since Sean Wharton resigned. Candidates are Amy Rodback, Gail Pierce, and Marion Wheaton. Just an interview tomorrow?
Just an interview. I don't believe that they have on their agenda to appoint so that they should be just be doing interviews and then deciding amongst themselves in closed session where they want to go for the next agenda.
All right. Bookmobile visit. What is a Goal Zero Yeti 400?
Well, a Goal Zero Yeti 400 allows, it's a solar system that allows them to offer charging for computers, cell phones, iPads, those types of things, those kind of devices that that folks in some of our more remote areas or areas that don't have direct library service could use while they're working with the librarian that drives the bookmobile around.
Okay. That bookmobile, what, goes to places like what?
Oh, it goes out to up to Hennifer, and it goes out into, you know, up into some of our cabin areas that have full-time residents. Especially around to our schools and things like that. So it has quite a wide array of places that it goes each week.
Okay. The Chamber Bureau is scheduled to make a presentation on its summer visitation. Have you seen a sneak peek of that?
Just from the standpoint of, you know, they're certainly seeing the shoulder seasons and the summer season pick up in visitors. You know, and that's where they've directed a lot of their marketing over the last few years is to hit those times of year that don't get the high seasons so that we can keep the hotels filled.
So what's the latest then on talks with the Chamber about the transit room tax formula?
So we both have a small group, Kim Carson and Chris Robinson from the council, and the chamber, a few members of the chamber board, and Bill Malone have had two meetings in that regard. First one was just kind of getting through some of the things that we already agree on and would go on to with the next agreement, and then the last one we talked a little bit more specifically about some of the proposals that the county is looking at. As well as some of the challenges that the chamber is looking at. So I think we're geared up for our next meeting, but I don't think we have that another meeting for at least 2 or 3 weeks.
Okay, so since this is not a quorum, these meetings are not open to the public?
They are not. So at some point, we will both be reporting back to our bigger groups. The goal right now, it seems, of both groups is we're trying to get done before the end of the year to at least have the proposal in place because the chamber needs to get into their marketing plan time, which starts in January.
So right now, the chamber receives 90%?
They receive 90%. And just as a preview, before we get into talking about the budget item on the agenda, we're budgeted to, or at least we expect to receive about $9.9 million in transit room tax in 2018. So it's grown tremendously over the last 5 years.
The chamber is also presenting its winter marketing plans Wednesday. Could those be affected if the TRT formulas change?
It could be, although probably not this winter. That's one of the things we're talking about is if we do change that formula, when does it go in place? And then, you know, does it go all in place at once? Is there a phasing plan? You know, different ways that it could be dealt with. So that's something that you'll hear from a proposal when they're ready to bring that out.
Right. And is there a minimum that the chamber is guaranteed? Is there some state law that regulates that?
Well, the state law talks about several things, and I'm not going to quote the state law because I can't remember it directly. But, you know, a chamber and visitors bureau is contemplated as being involved in the process as well as, you know, it's been the practice in Summit County that the chamber is involved. So I don't think there's any desire by the council to not have them involved and not have them be a promoter of our county. It's just a matter of to what level.
Now, Summit County, if it were to take a little bit more of that $9.9 million, would have to use it for very specific
things. That is correct. So it has to be used for items that will increase tourism, and that can be it can be advertising, it can be all of those things that are already it's already being used for, or it can be used for recreation or other facilities that promote tourism, and so that's the specifics that it can be used for.
All right. Let's move on. The county manager is budget is on the agenda. What are we talking about in terms of total spending here compared to last year?
Well, total spending, we're talking about a little over $53 million. And you'll recall that that budget includes the recommended increase to property tax as a revenue source. So that includes that $4.1 million increase in revenue. And within that, that budget for an expense, we've included $1.6 million of that going directly towards fund balance. You know, you start to peel it back, and without that $4.1 million, the increase in total revenue to the operating budget is really less than $1 million. So without that increase in revenue, we would have a fairly flat budget.
Okay. Does the new budget propose any additional employees?
It includes one additional employee. And the budget committee recommended this because we have the Camas building coming online. Probably towards the end of this year, still hoping November for that time period. And we are pretty maxed out on staff as far as how we maintain our buildings. So that is the one area that they did that. And they made some corresponding recommended expense reductions in order to bring that employee on.
So again, the budget that you're presenting here assumes that nearly 15% increase in revenues.
Well, it actually includes, because I have to budget for what I'm recommending, it includes the 27% increase in revenue. So that's why when I say that it includes that $4.1 million in revenue, we also budgeted for an expense to go towards fund balance. So that $1.6 million above the 15% increase is going to go directly to fund balance in the budget that I'm proposing.
Okay. So would the budget change at all if we went forward with the 27% increase?
It would not. I mean, it might change just a little bit based on the council's deliberations, but this budget does include the $4.1 million revenue increase.
Okay. Does the budget give every staff member a cost of living increase?
It does give the we've budgeted for up to a 2% cost of living increase. Right now, CPI is running less than that, so we would probably budget to CPI when that actually gets determined. But we've budgeted at this point for a 2% increase.
All right. And let's just look at some of the departments in terms of what's being budgeted. We are increasing the budget for sustainability by how much?
We are. Mostly from a capital perspective. So we've included about $17,000 additional from last year in order to advance the council's objectives around net zero for electrical energy. We're going to have to get into some studies and things with Rocky Mountain Power or with some of our, you know, Park City, Salt Lake City partners in order to do that. That's what that that level of spending was for. And then about $300,000 specifically for two solar projects, one on the Camas Service Building, one on the Richens Building, electric vehicle charging stations to be added to some of our facilities, and then a lighting retrofit for the Richens Building.
Yeah, those electric charging stations, would those be for free or would you be charging people?
Not sure yet. I think our desire is to move into some of the stations that allow us to charge for that electricity if you're not one of the county fleet vehicles, or at least so that we can track county fleet vehicles a little easier. The ones we have right now do not have that ability, so they're just free to pull up and charge your vehicle.
There's also an increase for the Economic Development Department. How much is this and what's that for?
So about $135,000 was added to the economic development budget, because economic development is turning into both economic development and workforce affordable housing. That's Jeff Jones is kind of taking that on as part of his economic development efforts. So $135,000 will be for a master planning effort, a very public intense master planning effort around the Klein Dolly property out at near Jeremy Ranch. And then as well, we've moved the contract that we have with Mountainlands Community Housing Trust underneath Jeff Jones and the Economic Development Department, because that's directly affordable housing based.
All right. Also, increase for public safety. How much are we talking about there?
Well, the main increase, I don't have the exact dollar amount in my head or on my paper here, but it's mostly around the dispatch merger. So now we'll be budgeting for a full year of that. Of that increase, and of course, as you'll remember, that came with more revenue than the expense goes up. So that's actually a net positive for the sheriff's office.
Okay. Also, some reductions in the budget. We're talking about the county fair. So, is that the upgrade to the fairgrounds or the event itself?
Well, it's a combination of things. We've tasked Travis English with our fair and the fair board to really grow that event over the last few years, and we've ended up probably expending a little bit more than we should, and that gets directly paid for out of our share of the transient room tax. And so as we're talking to the chamber about the county perhaps wanting to keep a little bit more of that, I think we need to control some of our spending around that funding source as well.
So we're going to make the chamber market it then.
Well, I mean, that's certainly a possibility. I mean, we do spend some marketing dollars around that. And that's one of the things that we're talking with Bill Malone about, is where are some things that they can relieve us of or just work better together within that funding source.
All right. And then also some planned reductions to youth recreation.
Yeah. So, just as part of the budget process and the funding source, the budget committee recommended that we start to peel back some of the spending on that. We've traditionally given about $35,000 a year each to the North Summit Recreation District, the South Summit School District, who does recreation in the South Summit area, and then $35,000 to the Snyderville Basin Rec area. So just in this time of even though the budget is growing, it's still a time of austerity. Depending on what the council does with revenue, we decided to peel that back a little bit.
All right. So we do have a public meeting on the truth and taxation proposal.
Yes.
This isn't necessarily the public hearing. Those happen later.
That's correct. So again, just to go back, the requirement is to have one public meeting in the process and then one public hearing, and then have notices published around those. The public meeting is tomorrow night. It'll happen at about 6:10 on the agenda, depending on how much public comment there is at 6 o'clock. And that is mostly information. So we will give another presentation to the public, similar to what we did with the council a few weeks ago. The public certainly there's probably things that they want to say. I think the council might entertain public comment at that, but they're not required to do that. Then in December, as the council is contemplating adopting the budget, we'll do two public hearings for truth and taxation, one on December 6th and one on December 13th, where it definitely is a public hearing where public comment will be taken.
Okay. That's it really much for the agenda. I wanted a couple of other items before you take
Sure.
off here. Any further developments on that agreement to preserve the Oscarthorpe farmland?
You know, there's been internal conversations. You know, one of the things, Kim Carson and Roger Armstrong are out of town this week, so we haven't advanced that conversation all that further. Still talking to Summit Lands and trying to figure that out, but nothing definitive at this point.
Okay, and then somebody sent us a photo of what was thought to be an oil rig right across the street from the Kimball Junction Transit Center. We've since learned that Summit Water drilling a well.
Or? It is. It's they have a well up on that hill. They're drilling another hole for that well, and it's about a 2 to 3 week project. They applied for a noise variance through me about a week ago. That was granted under certain conditions, and they're supposed to finish that within a 2 to 3 week period.
Okay, so that's a county approval as opposed to a state water engineer approval?
Well, the approval to do the work is through the state water engineer. They have to work with us on if they're going to work 24 hours a day, have lights up, that type of thing, noise. They have to work through us on those issues.
And I'm guessing that the rig is being run by a diesel engine. Any idea? I mean, certainly we're probably negating all of the benefits of our electric bus with that thing running 24/7.
Not sure about
3 weeks.
I don't know. I have the details on what kind of equipment they're using.
Yeah. Any idea why Summit Water needs to drill a well?
I don't. You'd have to ask Summit Water that question.
Anything else you want to mention?
Heard yesterday that we're going to have an opening on the Fair Board and an opening on the Mountain Regional Water Board. Due to some resignations, so be looking for those if you're interested.
Okay, Tom, thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much.
It's 8:30 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the Park City Planning Commission meets tomorrow night starting at 5:30 in the City Council chambers of the Marsac Building. In the studio with a rundown of that agenda, I'm Planning Director Bruce Erickson. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning, Leslie.
So other than treasure on the agenda, we've got lot combinations. These are happening so what? People can build a bigger home? Is that why people combine lots? Or?
Well, the first lot combination is up on McHenry, and that's just a continuation. And we're actually trying to make that to be a legal lot. What that is a couple of parcels that were left over from the old survey, and we're trying to clean that whole thing up and let those people be on a lot of record. So that's really nothing at this point, just cleaning it up. The same thing with 368 Main Street, which is actually Chamayo. Chamayo building, that lot was not exactly done right back in the 1800s, so we have to clean that one up, and it'll be right behind where Craig Elliott's building is. A little tiny alley back there that's always kind of a mess, that'll get cleaned up. So that's what we're doing there. The one up on 7400 Village Way, that one is to clean up and allow those people to build the house a little bit different location. So they're just cleanups right now.
Okay. Really, the main item, of course, is treasure. What's the latest here?
Well, I think what you're starting to see is you're starting to see the ramp up and the culmination of a project that's been going on since 1986. We are working hard to bring all the pieces and factors together and all the discussions of the Planning Commission over the last 15 years since 2004. The applicant is working hard to respond to the issues the Planning Commission has asked for. So in both cases, we're moving forward. The applicant has asked for a decision in December, which means we're going to put treasure on both meetings in October and both meetings in November. We'll have a special meeting. So we miss Thanksgiving. The November meeting will be November 29.
So that decision they have made that formal request for that decision?
They have put it in an email saying this is what we'd like to do. They have not made the formal request for the 45 days at this point.
Okay. So in terms of tomorrow's discussion, it looked like we're back to this refinement 17.2. Is that basically that the decrease that we saw in support commercial and, you know, just feet in the residential?
Right. And Francisco Astorga has put together a fairly interesting chart. But I think the conclusion Francisco is raising in the staff report that while 17.2 is a refinement from the 2004 and 2009 plans, it's not substantive at this point. And they, in fact, raised the height of a couple buildings when they eliminated part of the Building 5 section. So they're moving things around. They may be moving in the right direction. It's not really affecting the volume of excavation at this point. So that number has gone down, say, less than 10% at this point from about 1 million yards, about 900 and 900,000 yards. So a 10% reduction in excavation. The main retaining wall, the main cliffscape, still sits at somewhere between 100 and 125 feet high.
So in terms of, do we have the kind of agenda, or at least the idea of what's going to be discussed for these next four meetings?
We do. I think the next, we're going to discuss construction, and we're going to discuss phasing, we're going to discuss version 17.2 tomorrow night. Coming up after that, we'll go back and revisit traffic. The staff is working together right now to put together a whole series of potential conditions that would be applied to the project and build the finding of fact so that we can align all of the approvals.
So that'll happen at the October 5th, 25th meeting then?
That's correct.
Okay, and then we've got two others scheduled then for the 15th of November and the 29th of November?
That's correct.
All right, and then the decision could come December 13th?
Yeah, that's what the applicant is asking for. It's completely up to the Planning Commission, and they will have, judging from what we've done on other large projects, you could see findings of fact on the order of 25 to 75 separate findings of fact, and you could find anywhere from that number on conclusions of law, and then the Planning Commission needs to tell us whether they want us to work towards a conditioned approval or they want to recommend a denial, and then we have to create the conditions to do that.
All right. So can you do that in 2 weeks?
All of my staff is working feverishly. The applicant is doing it as well. We're well down the road on a couple of drafts that we're working on now. So, yeah, I mean, it's a matter of managing our time correctly.
Yeah, and other than you know, we've been talking about it for 30 years, I mean, is there any meaning to a December 13th decision? I mean, does it have to be done by the end of the year for any particular reason?
There's a couple of external factors. Obviously, the election. There are four or five Planning Commission members whose terms are up, and they may decide to stay or may not decide to stay, so that continuity is important to us and to the applicant. So I think there's a couple of things at play here that are not necessarily related to the December 13th meeting.
So the city thinks it's a good idea to wrap this up by the end of the year as well, then?
Yeah, this has been a big part of our life for the last 14 meetings, and it's costing somewhere around 1.5 to 2 full-time equivalents on a weekly basis just to manage this project going forward. So in terms of all the other initiatives we're trying to drive, we also have to stay focused on Treasure because it is a critical project. And it is a unique project in that all of our other large-scale MPDs in town, whether it's Deer Valley, Empire Pass, Park City Mountain Resort, or St. Regis, all have been part of a larger planned community, which gives us more opportunity to do open space, larger setbacks, less steep slopes for construction. So this one is highly unique, and it's in a neighborhood that's nearly built up. Both Lowell and Empire Avenue are neighborhoods. People live there. So all those things go into play now that weren't in play really in 85, 86.
All right. I also noticed in the last meeting minutes we have two new planners. Are these now replacements?
Yes, they are.
Okay. So we're losing planners?
Yeah, we do. But remember where they ended up. Planner Holly ended up in Colombia teaching English. Luis Rodriguez, our analyst 3, ended up in Italy teaching English. And Ashley Scarf, our other planning technician, ended up two steps up in her professional career down in Salt Lake City. So when we hire really smart people, they're always at risk to go away. So I work really hard to staff retention is my number one priority on my annual review.
So,
and so we're really pleased to have these two folks back with us. Liz Jackson is out of Salt Lake City. She comes out of the Sugar House community and University of Utah, and she's been very involved in Sugar House and Seven Rivers Council. Laura Newberry comes to us from San Diego State. So we have good experience, and I think you'll start to see the effect of these two folks.
Yeah. So what is that experience, though? Because as I had told you off air, you know, I've heard from at least one property owner that they've had to work with somebody right out of college that really didn't have a clue what was going on.
Oh, these guys have got a clue, trust me. And part of our mission is to train them correctly and bring them up through the system. That's very important to me to mentor them correctly, make sure they understand. We talk daily on building a planning ethic of how we make decisions and why we make decisions. We talk on a daily basis that our stewardship is to protect the community. That's what we're here for. And so we spend a lot of time fighting with one or two people, and we kind of forget about the other 7,000 people that we're protecting. So we talk constantly about that, and these folks are way down the road in their experience just after being here a month after professional education.
All right. Also notice that Harley-Davidson has left Main Street, so we've got one more chain store available on Main Street?
There is an open slot. Right now, I think with both Helly Hansen and L.L. Bean going in, we'll have to reset our accounting. But, yeah, we could take one more in the south end of Main Street.
Okay.
After that, so we'll be fine.
All right. Any news with regard to that that lawsuit?
Which lawsuit? I'm sorry.
Oh, filed by a couple of Main Street property owners against the
I have no news on that. I don't even know if we've been served on that one. They did file it. Service to us is another whole technical matter. So we'll leave that to the lawyers to figure out. I think we have a defensible position based on what we know nationwide. We've limited it to the historic district. We've given the conditions appropriate to the historic district, and we're protecting historic character. That's what we're doing.
All right, Bruce, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Leslie.
8:41 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, coming up October 16th through the 20th is Wellness Week at the PC Mark. On the phone to tell us more, I have Recreation Coordinator Cole Johnson, and in the studio with me, one of the presenters, Tippi Moreland. Good morning to both of you.
Morning, Leslie.
Good morning.
Okay, so Cole, let's just start with you. The Mark does this twice a year, fall and spring?
That is correct. Yeah, we do one in October and one in April.
Okay, so it kicks off Monday, as I mentioned. Maybe you can just kind of give us the rundown before we jump in with a discussion with what Tippi's going to be doing.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you said, Leslie, it's October 16th through the 20th, and each day we try and bring in either we'll offer a different wellness class or a speaker. So Monday the 16th, we're offering a CPR first aid class at PC Mark from 5:30 to 10. Tuesday the 17th, Park City Vaccines will be in the party room at the PC Mark from 12 to 4, offering flu shots to patrons and community members. Wednesday, Tippi will be there doing a presentation on travel tips. Thursday, the PC Mark staff will be offering a baseline fitness and BMI test, just basically a basic test to kind of see where you're at and provide a good baseline for you. And then Friday, we will be doing a live DJ choreographed spin event from 5:30 to 7 with Miss DJ Lux as our DJ.
So tell me how that works.
So that's basically, we'll have a live DJ in the spin room there, and it's basically, she has choreographed kind of a workout with our spin instructor. I believe it'll be Miranda, and that's $18, just a really fun, a lot of fun prize giveaways and things like that, and it's an hour and a half spin class.
Okay, great. And then you also have some TED Talks happening on Friday morning, 11 to 2. What's that about?
Thursday, 11 to 2, we're just going to play some educational TED Talks just in the party room there, just kind of looping, just for people to peek their heads in if they've got, if there's a topic plan that someone might be interested in.
Okay. And then again, for the CPR class and the DJ spin class, you do need to register, and you can do that online?
Yep, those do have fees associated with them. The CPR class is $60, and you can do that online or at the front desk at the PC Mark. And then the live DJ spin event is $18, and that one does fill up fast.
Okay. Thank you, Cole. And on this, in the studio, as I mentioned, we have Tippi Moreland. She will be offering some travel tips. This is happening on Wednesday from noon to 1 o'clock. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Leslie.
So tell us what's your background in travel here?
Yeah, So I'm actually a full-time city planner for Park City Municipal, and so I have a full-time desk job, but for the last 3 years, I've tried to maintain a healthy travel lifestyle, and I've traveled approximately 200,000 miles each year just for fun on my own. So it's something that I believe in as a part of maintaining a good work-life balance. And I try to inspire as many people as possible to travel as well. So finding cheap travel has been my hobby and my passion for the last several years, and I share that knowledge with as many people as will listen. It's just something I'm really passionate about.
Okay, how many SkyMile cards, credit cards, do you own?
I have a handful, and that's something that I'd like to talk about. So next week, I'll be giving a quick presentation or an hour-long presentation on making travel work for you. It's essentially a travel hacking 101. So when you're a regular person that has a full-time job like me, how do you fit travel into that? How do you make time and money to make that work? And I believe that it can work for anybody. So it's a huge part of living, working, and playing in a global society. So learning how to leverage that to work for you can help you see more of the world near or far. And I'll be teaching the basics of finding travel deals, using miles and points, and searching for the best flights. So anyone can come. I'll give a presentation, and I would be happy to answer anyone's questions on these things.
Okay. So in terms of maybe just talk a little bit about miles and points. I mean, is that the way to do it, is to use some of your miles and then to pay for the cheaper fare?
Well, it really depends. Especially in the past year, we've seen a lot of what I like to call fare wars between airlines. So each airline has different hubs in different cities. Like Salt Lake City is a Delta airline hub. So if American Airlines or United or one of the other airlines wanted to attack, quote unquote, attack Delta with a certain route, they would drop prices on American or United or another airline from Salt Lake to, say, Europe. So in the past year, I've seen at least six times where it's been about $400 round trip from Salt Lake City to Europe.
On something other than Delta?
Yes, correct.
Okay.
And sometimes Delta will join in too, but yeah, it's just a really fun thing to keep track of. And I can talk about that. But miles, like you asked about, miles is a good way to go, but it's difficult to earn, and you have to have a strategy with spending and earning it. But these cheap deals are my favorite way to go, because you can just get them when they're there. You don't have to worry about miles.
Okay, another question. I mean, should you pay a credit card an annual fee for their SkyMiles card?
So that depends on a lot of things. to keep it short, you want to look at what benefits the card has, and you want to look at where you want to travel to. So depending on the benefits of the card and what airlines it has a partner with, that can determine whether or not that fee is worth it for you.
Okay, it sounds really interesting. Tell me, 200,000 miles, you said, just in the last year?
So 200,000 miles in 2015, 2016, and I even took a five-week backpacking trip earlier this year all around Europe and the Middle East, so I try to fit it in where I can.
Who gets 5 weeks off a year?
Well, I used to work for another city, so it was kind of in between, so I leveraged that to my benefit.
Okay, awesome. So where's one of the coolest places you've been?
That's always a difficult question to answer, but I would have to say Cape Town. I've been there twice now, and it's a destination that really surprised me, and it has pretty much anything you can want within 2 hours of the city. So I would recommend anybody to go to Cape Town in South Africa.
And you found some good deals there?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. Sounds interesting. Tipley and Cole, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, Leslie.
KPCW News Time now, 8:54. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, after a three-way race for primary with all women candidates, Midway resident Celeste Johnson was successful. She's now running for Midway mayor against incumbent Colleen Bonner. Joins me now in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
So tell us a little bit about yourself and why you wanted to be mayor.
I moved to Midway almost 10 years ago, and obviously moved there because of the kind of a valley that it was and the peace that it afforded. Would like to protect that as much as possible, while protecting landowners' rights. I think I have some new perspective that might be helpful.
Okay. Is this your second attempt at mayor?
No.
Did you run again? This is your first.
First.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And did you serve on the council at all?
Nope. I have not served on the council, but I've been going to city council meetings, planning commission meetings, and work meetings for the last year and a half.
Okay. So I'm just guessing Midway's biggest issue is growth.
Uh-huh.
I mean, would you agree with that?
Yep, absolutely. Growth, and we're about to lose a fairly substantial resort tax that's been giving our town about $500,000 every year.
Why that wasn't re-upped?
Right. So it's based on a percentage of full-time residences compared to nightly rentals. And with the dramatic growth that we've been having, that percentage is now out of skew. And so when the 2020 census is done, we will be losing that.
So you're no longer a resort city?
Technically, by the state law code.
Ah, okay. How much money are we talking about?
We're talking about $500,000 or thereabouts, and our budget's, you know, about $3.4 million, so it's a pretty substantial chunk.
All right. Has the city figured out at all what its carrying capacity is? I mean, how much more it really can grow, just given infrastructure and water resources?
That is my very favorite question, because that's the exactly what I want to do. I want to find out really what Midway can support, and then have our zoning, our codes, everything then be based from that number. Currently, if building continues the way we're zoned, we'll grow from about 4,000 people to about 22,000 people. I think everyone agrees that that's not realistic. As we look at sensitive lands and some of the other things that really can't be built on, that number does drop substantially. My question is, why hasn't the zoning reflected that then? So we really need to clean up our zoning and clean up our codes so that as we move forward, we're moving forward towards a goal that we all agree on.
Yeah. What about transportation issues? Any idea how many people you have in Midway who are commuting somewhere else?
Well, Midway is basically a bedroom community, so everyone has to commute someplace else. A few people work from home. I'm one of the lucky ones that have worked from home. But most people have to go down to one of the cities on either side.
And as a result, I mean, are you seeing any air quality issues?
We're starting to, of course, and that's another big concern. Heber's growing even faster than Midway is, and that impacts Midway. We're in a little valley, and so anytime bad air comes up even from the Provo Canyon, it starts to affect us. And Wasatch County's been voted one of the healthiest counties in the state. I'd like to keep it that way.
Heber City and Midway used to be the affordable places to live, and it looks like we're seeing, just like everywhere else, prices going way up. Is it needed in Midway? I mean, and is it the government's job to build it?
Is affordable housing needed in Midway? You know, I always question whether or not the government should get involved in that sort of thing. For many years, I was involved with Habitat for Humanity in Salt Lake City, and I'm a huge proponent in helping people help themselves as a result of that. So if we could instigate some program like that, I would be all in favor of it. Midway is becoming more and more expensive. Land is becoming more and more valuable.
Yeah. So where do you stand on the open space bond initiatives that was recently voted down by the council? I mean, basically, they said there's just not enough time to put this together.
Right. And I was very much a part of putting the information that we had gathered regarding an open space bond in front of the council. A citizens group formed several town hall meetings. We conducted a very thorough survey of our citizens. It was a disappointment that that was not put on the ballot. We were asking for the people to be given the opportunity to decide. I know that the city's saying they didn't have enough time. My question is, it's been asked for a long time. Why didn't they start sooner?
Yeah, there was also concern, though, whether or not, I mean, Midway City residents would then be paying two bonds because Wasatch County's moving forward with one, it sounds
right,
like.
Right, and that's a little bit of a myth because we don't have to pay for a bond that we don't use. Had Wasatch County's bond passed and had they been willing to commit to Midway how much of that bond we could have, we would never have issued our bond. Just because it would have passed possibly for us to have a bond doesn't mean we ever had to use it.
Quickly, I want to just ask you about the mail-in voting. I mean, any concerns given what we saw happen in Midway with the...
Yeah, I do. I have not seen the Lieutenant Governor's report. I know they were doing some sort of an audit. I have not seen any results from that. But there were multiple fiascos with that, and I've had many people express concern to me. So,
now,
yes.
Weren't you the one who kind of called the problem out?
No, I participated in that. The Wasatch Democratic Party actually called the problem out, and we're very forward-thinking and trying to get a solution quickly. They asked what my concerns were, and I agreed. All citizens should be given the same right to vote and to have had the same notification. In Midway and Heber, that did not happen.
Okay. Celeste, I need to leave it there. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Celeste Johnson, again, one of the two candidates for Midway City Mayor. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW.